You're listening to Careers and Cocktails, Career Talk with a Twist, hosted by expert recruiter Renee Fry. Let's get this party started.
Hey, party people, welcome back to Careers and Cocktails. I am thrilled to be zooming in with Timmy Bauer. He is a kids book author, founder of Dinosaur House that turns industry leaders into kids book authors. You are my idol, a kids book author.
Thank you.
That's the coolest profession I think we've had on here.
Wow. So, okay. What's the second coolest you've had on here?
A psychic.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I haven't turned a psychic into a kids book author. I don't even know how I feel about that. I'd have to pray about it.
That's funny. So tell us what we're drinking today, Timmy.
Oh, okay. So we are drinking one of my favorite drinks. It's a peanut butter old fashioned. It's very similar to a regular old fashioned. It's a whiskey drink, but instead of using regular whiskey, you use peanut butter whiskey. And instead of using orange bitters or Angostura bitters, you use chocolate bitters. It's a very simple drink. It will get you there quickly.
Well, I just can't wait because I got to tell you the story about this bottle, Timmy. So I ordered this and then I ordered the purple gin, Empress gin, because you can't get it in Wisconsin. This you can get in Wisconsin, but the Empress gin you couldn't. And so I ordered it from Cask Cartel, which I think is in New York. Anyway, like a month or two goes by and I'm like, where's the booze? Like, Megan, did you see the booze shipment? I haven't seen the booze shipment. It literally was lost. She had to file a report and then they had to reship it out. So this is the first time I'm having it today.
Okay. Awesome. Well, I just bought a new bottle. So we're both opening a bottle.
Awesome.
Okay. So I drink Screwball just because it's actually the only peanut butter whiskey that I know about. I have seen some others, but I couldn't name them to you.
Yeah.
So yeah, bottle of Screwball. That's the first ingredient. That's the main ingredient.
Do I put my ice in now?
Yeah, you put your ice in first.
Okay. So I have these cool ice spheres from Tovlo that I bought on Amazon. They're my favorite. They're super easy to make these beautiful ice spheres or balls.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a big rock ice. Same thing. I got like silicone mold for it.
Cool.
I used to be a bartender at Disney.
Really?
All this bartending stuff is coming from.
Awesome.
Okay. Yeah. So big rock ice, if you've got it, if not just regular ice in the glass, and then I'm going to eyeball it cause I didn't bring a jigger with me, but you're eyeballing around 1.5 to 2 ounces of liquor.
Okay. And it smells.
I want a little bit more than that. This drink is almost all alcohol, so you don't have to fill up your glass.
No, don't fill up your glass. Definitely don't get
it. Then the bitters. So this is kind of to taste. And I will say chocolate bitters, I like them, but they bring down the sweetness of the drink. So if you like a sweeter drink, you want to go less on the chocolate bitters. But I like them, so I'm going to go a little heavy. Typically, like you turn the bottle upside down and you shake it, and every shake is like a spritz. Traditionally you would do about 6.
Okay. I think I got about 4. I'm going to test it there.
Okay. All right. Next up is, if you've got it, a cherry.
Yeah, I got cherries. What kind do you have? I got
jumbo maraschino cherries from Publix.
I've got Amarena.
Great. You really just need one, but I'm going to throw 3 in there and I'm going to get the juice in it because I like the juice.
Okay. I'm going to follow your lead. I put a little juice in there.
Great. And then you got to stir. And traditionally with a old fashioned, you stir 30 stirs. And I think the reason they picked 30 is just because it's a lot. You're supposed to stir it a lot.
That is so funny. Okay, so are we stirring so that the ice melts a little bit?
Yeah, you want the ice to melt a little bit.
Got it.
Traditionally, the reason you would choose a big rock ice is so that you can control how much water to liquor you have.
Right.
The more stirring you do, the more water, the less stirring, the less water.
So being a former bartender, Timmy, what's the craziest drink you've a request that you had at the bar was?
I honestly didn't have anything crazy. I was only a bar, so I was a bar back for months, and then I was only a bartender for a couple of weeks. But I was making drinks as a bar back, so I just learned the menu, and I would make your like standard set of drinks. It was the bar was themed at during for Prohibition era. It's called the Edison in Disney Springs.
Oh, cool.
And the whole thing is like, it's supposed to feel like one of those places in the 20s that you would have to say a password to get into. Yeah. And all the drinks are themed after that era, but of course they're sweeter for today's taste. And so, yeah, so it's a lot of traditional drink making.
Cool. So now our drink is ready.
Yeah.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers. I forgot to say, you sip it.
Yeah.
You're supposed to sip it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's delicious. You can, yeah. I did the four little spritzes of the, that's like, I can't even describe it. It's like a little bit of coffee, a little bit of peanut butter, a little bit of chocolate. Oh, it's delicious.
Yeah, it does have a little bit of a coffee taste to it, even though as far as I know, there's no coffee in it.
Right.
But it's from the chocolate probably.
Right. Fascinating. Okay. So Timmy, you're a kid's book author. What did you want
to get drunk?
When you grew up?
Yeah, great question. When I was 10 years old, I remember reading comic books in the back of the van on the way to the chiropractor. And I was either reading most likely Garfield, but it could have been Calvin and Hobbes. And I just remember thinking like, I think I can do this. And so I got out some paper and pencils and I just started drawing my own comics. And I knew that I didn't have a name for what it was that I wanted to grow up and do, but I do now. It's story artist. I knew that I wanted to be a story artist. So whether it's comics or working in an animation studio or making kids books or making storyboards for movies, I just knew that I wanted to be a story artist. But I didn't have that name for it. That was just like, I had this broad category of all these different types of jobs in my head and all of them sounded good. And what's interesting is I never thought, like I always thought I'm going to work in one of these things. And I'm actually I have a customer, we're making a book that, so her son loves trains and she wants to, everybody always tells her son like, oh, you should work for a train company when you grow up. And she doesn't like that. She's like, no. Don't cause my son to think that low of his options. I want my son to think about owning a train company when he grows up. Yes. So our book is going to be about him owning the train company when he grows up.
I like his mama.
Yeah. And similarly, everybody always talk to me about working in an animation studio or, you know, working for a newspaper, even though those are dead, but back in the 90s, yeah. Nobody ever said like, oh, you can own an animation studio. But that's where my mindset is now. I'm like, you know, honestly, I just love the idea that I have created a kids book creation studio and I train illustrators to work with me on these client projects. And that is so fulfilling to me. I just love the idea that I, instead of just working in something like this, that I can actually build something like this.
Yes. And you know, what's crazy is I feel like my whole life, no one talks to you about being the owner. It's all like working for a company, working at the company, you know what I mean? And changing that frame. I saw it, and probably why I wanted to get into entrepreneurship is my dad owned multiple businesses when I was a child. And so I saw that firsthand. Obviously my daughters now see me firsthand in it. And I try to talk to them about it as much as possible. So they really fundamentally understand what I do. You know, I have them in the office and they can help with little tasks and whatnot, but you are so right. So we've got to change the way we chat with children about the opportunities of the future.
Yep.
Like, I haven't even thought about that, Timmy.
Yeah. Well, I have the awesome privilege of getting to make a book that has that as its message, because that's that's what the customer wanted. So that's just really exciting to me. So there's a lot of different things that I'm building. And one of them is this thing called monthlykidsbook.com, which is essentially just get a free kids book from me in your inbox every month. Some of them are going to be with me as the author, and some of them are going to be a customer's book like the one I just described.
Oh, fun. So are you actually physically mailing the books to them, or are they digital copies?
Yeah, no, it's, you can download it on your kid's Kindle or your iPad or whatever. You can read it off of your phone. And then I just know that some percentage of that list is going to buy the physical version. So it's good for my customers and it's good for me, but there's no ask. It's literally like, hey, here's the link. If you want it physically, here's the link to download it on your phone right now.
I love it. So Timmy, tell us your background. How did you get started in doing this and starting your own business?
Okay. So my background is a lot of different things, but as far as kids books go, when I was 17 years old, I was just looking for a way to connect with my little brother, Tristan, who was 4. And so it's a big age gap there, 17 years old and 4 years old. Yeah. And I just remember, like, at the same time as that was going on, I really started to like wonder if I could do what Dr. Seuss did. I was reading a Dr. Seuss book and I was like, I think I can do this. Like, I think I could write this or something like this. So I started writing a book called Billy the Dragon, which is the one behind me. And I wrote it for my little brother, Tristan. And so every night before bed, I would have tried to have come up with at least a few lines that I've added to the story. And the goal was always like, can I get him? Can I scare him? Can I gross him out? Can I get him laughing? I was just trying to create some reaction in my little brother. And that created, I think, a deep connection that I have with Tristan that, like, even today, he's a teenager and we hang out over video games together. And I just love spending time with him. And I think a big part of it is that connection that I formed with him over, like, hey, I'm going to make a kid's book for my little brother, Tristan.
Oh, absolutely. So how, when you're thinking about connecting with a child, and this, are you thinking, I'd love to know what goes on behind the scenes. Are you thinking age specific thing? Like with your brother, for instance, he was 4, and, or were you just testing and retesting and seeing what worked?
This is something that I think I really need to dig into. So I've been praying about this. I think that I need to be digging into my own personal brand and try to like start telling the story of me a little bit more than just having a company. And part of it is that is like, hey, I want to be the guy that starts helping people understand how they can connect with their kids.
Yeah.
Not because I'm a parent and I know what it is, but literally like where my background as a kids book author was about me connecting with my 4-year-old little brother. And so as far as what I've got so far, it's like, you know, parents or just adults in general, adults have the things that they wish their kids were interested in. They have the things that they wish their kids liked. They have the things that they wish that they could connect with their kids about. And a lot of times I see adults kind of wishing that their kids were not into the things that their kids are into. But I think connecting with your kids is about taking things that you want to connect with them about, but also entering into their world, the mediums that they love, the things that they find funny, the things that they find gross, that they find scary. I mean, one of the first things I'll do with a customer, sorry, this is like turning into a sales pitch.
I love this. Keep going. I'm fascinated by this.
One of the first things that I'll do with a customer is I draw out of them all the things that they in their perfect world, like I like to ask, you know, what's a topic or idea that you wish the next generation would chew on and think about and, you know, develop. And then I just start asking like, okay, let's go back in time. Cause this is if we're writing a kid's book together, it's going to be 7, 8, 9 years old as your target demographic. What did you think was funny when you were 7? What did you think was funny when you were 8 and 9? What was gross to you at 7, 8, and 9? What was terrifying to you at 7, 8, and 9? You know, what caused you daily stress? You know, let's really go back in time. And then the goal is just, can we make a story that hits at the heart of those things, but is about the theme or the idea that you told me at the beginning of the call you want kids chewing on?
Fascinating. I can't even think back that far. I mean, my first memory, I remember, if you ask me what my first memory was, I can remember in second grade playing on the monkey bars at the elementary school. That's about it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know how I was feeling or what I thought was funny.
Well, you know, I would probably dig into that a little bit and go, why were you on the monkey bars? Was it because you just liked the gymnastic activity of climbing monkey bars? Were you trying to impress your friends? How afraid were you of falling? Were you pretty fearless about it? Did you ever fall and hurt yourself? Like, these are things that I would want to dig into. And then I'd start pulling from my own experience. I remember me as a kid, I loved the idea that I was able to get on top of the monkey bars. I thought that was like this extra thing that a lot of other kids couldn't do. And then I could walk on top of the monkey bars. Little did I know that was the easier thing to do. Like, it's terribly hard with your shrimpy little arms that you have as a 7-year-old to get it across the monkey bars. And what I just described to you, that's very much like what I would do in a customer call. So now we've got a thing that I can play with in a picture book. The idea of like a kid, you know, thinking that it's better to be on top of the monkey bars versus trying to go across the way that requires you to actually have upper body strength. And I can play with the fact that, like, you know, here's what a gymnast's arms look like. Here's what my arms look like. Like, kids are going to laugh at that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. And all those questions would lead me right, you know, now you got me thinking. So I love that. I love that. What can we celebrate for you or with you this week, Timmy? What are you celebrating? Oh, that's
a good question. Okay. This week, well, the week just started. So okay. Maybe last week. Last week, I had a customer that said that he was going to buy a book on a retreat. And then he just sort of reiterated, we were on a group call this past week, and he reiterated, he was like, yeah, I'm going to be a customer. And I actually also want my business to be a customer as well. So we're going to do the book that I want to make, but then also we're going to take this stuff that I want my company to be about and turn that into a kid's book as well. So I potentially have turned this customer into two customers. I don't know, because I'm not that great at sales. So this is an area of development for me. But yeah, I think that's worth celebrating.
Fantastic. Cheers.
Cheers to that.
That's so good. Okay. So you talked about personal brand, and you mentioned kind of when we were setting this up that you've always been afraid of diving into personal brand.
Yes.
Tell me more. Where does that come from? Because I worked at one of the biggest branding companies in the country. I worked at Target Corporation, and that's where I learned about personal brand and what brand meant, as you know, personal branding and why it was so important. But what are you afraid of?
Yeah, I think the fear is like, who am I? You know, I'm just a nobody. I'm just
nobody.
Well, you're maybe Jimmy not Bauer. To you. We've had a couple of conversations, but there's this fear that I like, it's a fear of putting yourself out there and just being unremarkable. And the thing is, like, I know that it's not true, but it's one of those, like, I have faith, but also I question whether I'm just pumping myself up full of air.
Oh gosh. Do you have imposter syndrome is what we call it?
So, I mean, I'm like, chronically...
someone gonna find you out, Timmy, because we know you're writing the book. So you are not an imposter.
Yeah. Imposter syndrome has been a big part of my life. I can say that I've made considerable progress about it. Like, in my 20s, I was full of imposter syndrome, and I probably still am today, but like, I could not stand up in front of you and say, like, I am really good at what I do. I couldn't say that to you in my 20s. I can say that to you now. I am genuinely good at what I do. I am genuinely good at making kids books that kids love.
Well, I'm glad you got over that obstacle. Now, how do you get to the next level?
Yeah, it's a great question.
What's the worst that can happen if you start sharing about yourself?
Yeah, so honestly, the worst thing that could happen is just no one pays any attention.
And you know what? When I get in front of big groups and I speak in front of thousands of people, you know the first thing I say to myself? No one's listening anyway.
It's true. Nobody cares about you. They care about themselves.
Yeah. Okay.
That was a harsh thing to kind of wake up to, like, as a marketer. It's just, hey, people care about themselves.
Oh yeah.
So it's just all about, can you give them something that they will make about themselves?
Right. And I don't have a marketing background. That's my weakness, I'm good at business development. Marketing is my absolute, that's the area that I'm working on to improve.
Ah, interesting.
Didn't take any business classes. I sat in all these science and math classes. And anyway, we could talk about that for hours.
I'm down.
So tell me about your most recent project. You're working on a book right now.
Yeah, I've got a few books that are in the works. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I've got about 30 books that are in the works right now. About 10 of them are customer books. And then there's several that are potential customer books, meaning I'm developing the idea or the cover so that I can potentially pitch it to customers. So for example, I want to be a pro water polo player when I grow up. That's a book that is a cover without an author, because I think that somebody will want to make that book. So I want to get ahead of it and be like, hey, I've already made the cover. Let's talk about what the inside of the book looks like.
Cool.
You don't like this cover, you can just see what it could look like, you know.
Cool. But what about the one work, the when I was a kid in the blank decade?
Yeah. So this I'm very, very into. And I actually, I'll do this thing. This is going to get a little woo-woo spiritual, but I genuinely believe this.
I like
this.
Woo-woo.
So I'll go for walks and just pray. I pray about my business. And as a Christian, I think we pray as Christian, like Christians pray about everything except for their business. It's for whatever reason, Christians generally are afraid to pray about their business. It sounds selfish to be like, God, please bring me customers. So anyway, I'll pray about my business and I'll pray about like the different things that I'm working on. And sometimes I'll genuinely believe that God is encouraging me or pushing me to do a certain thing. And this is one of those things, like to do this 90s series or do this series of when I was a kid in the blank series. And what's really fun about it is it gets right back to that connecting thing. Like how fun is it? Like the parents of today are children of the 90s for the most part. Like a lot of like parents of young kids today are children of the 90s. They want to share with their kids about what their childhood was like, but in a way that their kid would actually take an interest in. Because you can pull your kid aside and be like, when I was a kid, you know, we didn't have cell phones, but it just sounds like a lecture to a kid.
Right.
If you can do it in a way where it's fun or funny or gross or weird, now you've got their attention. And if you have a book that's just like fun, funny, gross, and weird about what childhood was like for you, you have a kid, you have a book that a kid's going to be asking you to read to them on a regular basis that's about your childhood. You're going to get to talk to them about the stuff of your childhood. It's also kind of like tapping into just like the nostalgia of, we are all nostalgic about the decade that we grew up in. I'm nostalgic about the 90s. I can't help it. If I see something that's got a Super Nintendo on it, I just want to buy it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I'm an 80s girl, probably more so. But that makes me think of everyone had Ataris, but we had ColecoVision, which I thought produced better games to begin with. Anyway.
That is something I want to put in a book that's called When I Was a Kid in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit worried about getting in trouble because, you know, I'm going to be using all these name brands to talk. But then I thought about it and I was like, you know, here's the thing. Worst case scenario, I get a cease and desist letter from a brand that caught on to the fact that I made this book. This is a self-published book and I don't even have to put it on Amazon. I could put it on like Gumroad or something.
What is Gumroad? I don't know what Gumroad is.
It's just like another platform where you can sell stuff.
Oh, I had no idea.
A lot of creators use it. The point is, the question is just like, what do I fundamentally believe? Do I fundamentally believe that I shouldn't be allowed to talk about childhood of us 90s kids and use like, yeah, well, you know, there was a big fight over whether the Sega Genesis was better or the Super Nintendo was better. Documentaries are allowed to do it. How come a kid's book is not allowed to do it? I fundamentally believe this.
Yeah.
And so
is that fact? Like you can't publish that? But you could.
It's not, you know, it's not so much that there's what's allowed under the law. And then there's what you'll get away with. And oftentimes they're not the same thing. And in the case of using others' brand names in a product that you sell, where things are going to air is stakeholders will not want to be a part of something that is using other brands' names. Well, the good news is I intend to do this without any stakeholders involved. Just a pure, this is me making a book for 90s kids to talk to their kids about what the 90s was like.
I think that is an incredible idea because, well, one, you talk about nostalgic and we're, you know, I've never seen like Friends shirts. My 11-year-old daughter bought a Friends shirt. It says Friends. Yeah. She's never seen the darn show in her life and she bought it because it's cool. And like all the stuff that's coming back, it's real. The nostalgia is real.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I just want to, nobody's done it, and it should, I think it should exist. And absolutely. So, and I have the ability to make it.
And then how fun would it be to talk about, like, I was on a phone with the big long cord that I used to string down the hall to talk to my friends.
Exactly. And a kid is going to find that funny.
Yes,
especially if I can play it up in a really funny way. You know, like, I don't know, you get to the end of the cord and you don't realize it. And then it, like, you know, pulls you backwards or something. So there's some way that I can make that funny. And if I make it funny enough for a 7, 8, 9 year old, they will be asking to be read that book. And now you are talking to your kid about your childhood on a regular basis.
Exactly. I love it.
And so anyway, a question I like to ask is just like, what are you nostalgic about? And then whatever the answer to that question is, I just log it away. It's like, okay, when I get to the book on your generation, on your decade, I want to make sure that I'm tapping into what you're nostalgic about.
I love it. Well, mine was big ass bangs, like big hair, the biggest hair. I love big hair.
That's awesome.
That's what I'm nostalgic about. All of my yearbook photos, I have bangs, like something about Mary bangs.
That's so cool. I like that a lot.
Oh my God. Okay. Let's go back to, you were talking about, you ask your, as you walk, you ask God to bless your business. Now tell me, because I believe there's abundance everywhere and we are all, it's all just waiting for us. And I'm the same way. You should be able to pray on that. But what made you say, I'm going to pray on this versus where the norm you said isn't?
This is going to sound, you know, I'm not going to apologize for it. I believe that the Holy Spirit told me, like God told me that he wants me to pray for this. Like, I believe that I was praying, and I know that God was like literally telling me in my heart, if you want customers, you need to ask me for them.
Well, that's great. And you stepped into this and you're doing what you love, what you're passionate about, and look at all the things that are coming to you. There's a reason for that, Timmy.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I also agree that we live in a world that is full of abundance, but our brains are wired in such a way to live as if there's scarcity. And I think it's probably because we come from, like, all of our programming, I think a majority of our programming comes from a time in human history where there was scarcity. And we don't understand that actually we live in a world of abundance. It's not going to be handed to you, except a lot of it is handed to us. For example, if you live in America, it's not hard to get clean drinking water. The majority of the world doesn't have that. So it's just, to me, it's just a matter of like, what do you have and what are you going to do with it? And that's what matters. Like, we all have stuff. We all have stuff. We're all given a different amount of stuff, whether that's abilities or things that we have access to. And I think if you're a believer in God, the question is, God, why did you give me this? And how can I be a blessing with it?
Absolutely. It's all about, and gratitude. I feel like if you're grateful for things, then they come in more numerous quantities as well. And I can tell you, so I visualize the future, and 99% of the stuff comes true. And it's through.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? That's just strange. How, like, I still struggle to get a hold of that we can visualize something and there is a likelihood that it will come true.
Yeah, because our thoughts are things. I've studied a lot of this stuff.
Yeah,
but the one thing that I had to struggle with that scarcity mindset, so I didn't get into mindset probably until about 4 years ago, and then I went, you know, dove head first. And it's like, I had to retrain my subconscious beliefs that my parents put into my brain, you know, because as we're raised, before the age of 7, we believe everything to be true because we're trying to survive as human beings. But after, you know, once you look back and then you have to rewire all of your thoughts, that's what I, to me, it was difficult work, but it was well worth the work because phenomenal things have transpired because I've done that work. And there's no stopping me now, really.
Yeah. And so much of our beliefs are based on survival and what we got when we were kids. And it is hard to break away from that. I struggle about the fact that to this day, like, I struggle with the fact that, like, my dad, genuinely, I think my dad does not believe that I will succeed in what I've decided I'm going to pursue with my life.
Are you serious?
But I think yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah. But, and then I pray
that's
about
probably
it.
Probably where that imposter syndrome comes from.
Maybe. I mean, I don't want to be the kind of person that just casts blame.
Oh yeah. No, I wouldn't.
I think that way I can fall into a victimhood mentality. And the question is victimhood. Like, we all have stuff that is stuff that we need to overcome. And I think we can do, like, we could probably do a mixture of both, but we have to choose. Are we going to be the victim in our story, or are we going to be the protagonist? And if I'm the victim, then I'm going, yeah, the reason I think this way is because my dad doesn't believe in me, and that's why I'll never succeed. But if I'm the protagonist, I go, hey, this is what my dad thinks about me, but this is what my heavenly dad thinks about me. And my life needs to be an act of choosing what my heavenly dad thinks about me over what my earthly dad thinks about me.
Yes. And I didn't mean to say victim or blame, but you have an awareness of where it might have transpired from in your mind. You know what I'm saying? Is having the awareness and then changing.
Yeah.
Your thinking.
Yeah.
Like, great example.
Yeah. I think that's super important.
That's great. Oh my gosh. Everyone needs to listen to this podcast and watch this, because so many people struggle with mindset. I feel like I was just talking to someone else and he said, I want you to share what's the one greatest thing that you've overcome as an entrepreneur. And to me, it's mindset. It's exactly what we're talking about, because like, you got to get over yourself, get out of your own way. You know,
yeah.
We're smart people, like, get out of our own ways.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Super cool. Okay.
Our own thoughts are in our way.
Exactly.
And we can change our thoughts, but that's an intentional act. And I believe it's a spiritual act.
Yeah. Cool. I love it. So where do you get your inspiration from, Timmy?
I don't have like a super special answer for you on this one. I get my inspiration from literally like everywhere. Like if I watch a movie, I'm going to be inspired by that movie. I try to get as little inspiration as I can from other picture books. I want to get inspiration from everything besides picture books and just put that inspiration into the inspiration blender and have that output picture books.
I love inspiration blender. So do you have a format though for your, do children's books have a format, or do your books have a format?
Yeah. So, but well, I don't know what you mean. I have a writing format that I follow. And then I have like a principle that I follow. So the format that I like, literally like literal physical format that I follow is I go, I write the title of kids book in my notes on my phone. Anytime I have an idea for a kid's book, I write kids book colon what I think the title of the book is. And then I just start writing, the pages of the book, and I do it very free flowy. Anytime I think there should be a page break, I draw a underscore line where I think there should be a page break. And I have illustrators that work for me, and I am an illustrator. So whether I'm the one doing the illustrations or whether I'm passing it off to an illustrator, I always say like, the page breaks are just a suggestion. I want you to have some agency in this as well. But I'll put in brackets what I need illustrated. So I'll write what I think the words on the picture book are, and then I'll just put in brackets, you know, have the little girl straining to grab that last monkey bar as her arm is shaking and her friends are cheering her on. And one friend is like telling her that she can't do it, like something like that. And then I kind of like leave it up to the illustrator to interpret that the best that they can. There's a lot of post. I get my first draft of illustrations and I like look through it and go, you know, what translated well and what didn't, and then try to massage different illustrators. I have to do less of that. But anyways, that's the like physical format that I'll follow. And
got
then the
it.
Principle that I follow is this principle of reaction triggers. I came up with the name for that, reaction triggers, because I haven't seen this principle get talked about and codified anywhere. But it's the idea that when you think about what makes a kid's book something that a kid is wanting to have read to them every night, it is how many times does the book cause them to have a big reaction. So for example, does this page cause the kid to roll on the floor laughing? Does it cause the kid to go, oh my gosh, that's so gross, or scream, or be like, oh no, or whatever? I want to cause those kinds of reactions using reaction triggers. I need the pages to be as chocked full of reaction triggers as possible. Ideally, I want to be causing a big reaction in the kids on every page, whether that's grossing them out, making them laugh, something like that. So that's the principle that I write by, and I'll write, rewrite, go back over my work and go, how could I make this more gross? How could I make this more funny? Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love that you use your cell phone notes, because that's how I wrote my book, I Hate Mondays. I was going to a conference in Vegas, and it just started coming to me, and I was furiously typing on my phone on the airplane, and that's how it all started.
Yes. Yes. And sometimes if I feel writer's blocked, I'll literally go for a walk and think about the book. And I pull out oftentimes, sometimes I'll go for a walk. I'll literally like think about the book. I'll pray. Sometimes I'll be like, God, please just like give me, help me break through this writer's block. I'll pull out the voice memos app on my phone and just hit record and just start talking out the book. And then a lot of times that'll break through it. And then I can just sit back down, listen to the recording and type.
Nice. I love it. So where can everyone find you, Timmy? How can they reach you?
Great question. Very soon, I think I'm going to be pushing people to a YouTube channel if God really does want me to press into personal brand. So that'll be just typing my name, Timmy Bauer, into YouTube. But right now I'm doing this thing called monthlykidsbook.com. Monthlykidsbook.com, all one word. It's not monthly kids books. It's monthlykidsbook.com. You're getting a book a month in your inbox for free from me. That's it. That's the whole point of it. If you want to buy a physical book, awesome. You get to fund my Lunchables addiction. But I ultimately just want to build this list up to, 100,000 parents that are getting a free kids book for me every month, because the audience is what's important to me.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. Now, are you like reaching out to schools about this too? Or how are you?
Yeah, that used to be my big thing, is like touring and going to schools and all that. And it used to be really hard. And this is going to sound so cocky. I don't mean it to. Praise God. It's not that hard for me now. I can literally just tweet pictures of a book that I finished and say, hey, love to test this out on some classrooms. Anybody interested? And boom, I've got 30 schools lined up to tour.
Oh, good for you. That's great. I love it. Yeah.
So I'm still touring with the latest one, Lucas the Dinosaur Entrepreneur.
Awesome. I love it. I love all the things you're doing, Timmy. I'm so glad we have been connected, because you are an incredible human being and you are doing some amazing things. And thank you for sharing and going deep with us here today. Thank you, Renee. I really appreciate it.
Hey, when we talked on my podcast, you talked about that if you were to make a kid's book, it would be about confidence. Let me know if you want to make that kid's book.
Oh, yeah. You remember well. Well, I would love to do that someday. I'll put it on my list for sure.
Okay. All right. Cheers. To you, Renee.
And for you listeners, if you need help with resume writing, career coaching, please go to payraiseandpromotion.com to find out more. You can even find out where to purchase my book, I Hate Mondays, there as well. And we will see you next time. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We are thrilled to have made a worldwide impact with listeners in 9 different countries. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please be sure to subscribe to Careers and Cocktails on YouTube and drop us a review on your favorite podcast app. If you're looking to update your resume or you're stuck in your career, I'm designated by LinkedIn as the top resume writer and career coach expert. I even created a resume and e-learning course to help you if you want to do your own resume. It's super simple and extremely affordable. Go to careersandcocktails.com to learn more. I also wrote a book called I Hate Mondays for all of you job seekers who hate your jobs and want to love your Mondays. You can go there for the same information. And of course, I am up to so much valuable information sharing that for you hiring leaders, if you want to find the secrets to finding the best talent, I have a hiring guide at careersandcocktails.com as well. I am here to share information and help people love what they do. Until next time, cheers.